Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Return from Babylon, Lecture 2, Episode 3. In a previous episode, we talked about how the Kutim obstructed the rebuilding of the temple and how
the
Jews overcame all kinds of obstacles and continued rebuilding it. In this episode, we will look at the reconstruction project more closely. The temple reconstruction resumed and continued for exactly 4 years. It was completed in 516 BCE. The temple was consecrated on the third day of the month of Adar. Exactly 70 years passed from the moment the first temple was destroyed in 586 BCE. Chanukat HaBayit is Hebrew for consecration of the house of God. Curiously, the second temple was completed on the 3rd of Adar, but this date is not considered a holiday in the Jewish calendar. Why isn't Hanukkah celebrated on this day? That's because the Jewish sages considered that on the 3rd of Adar, the temple could not be fully consecrated because the Jews were still under Persian rule. The true consecration of the temple will take place more than 200 years later, when the Jews expel the Greeks from Jerusalem, enter the desecrated temple, and the temple will be for the first time in many centuries in the hands of Jews. Jerusalem will once again be the Jewish capital, and the Jews will no longer be under the rule of foreign nations. On the 24th of Kislev, the second consecration of the temple will take place and be commemorated by a holiday called Hanukkah, which is still celebrated today. 23 years have passed since King Cyrus allowed the Jews to return to the land of Israel. All this time, a special person named Ezra had been living in Babylon. He was the head of his generation. It has been 23 years since the Jews returned, but why didn't Ezra return
with them?
Because Ezra was the closest pupil of a man whose name was Baruch ben Neri. Baruch ben Neri was the closest pupil of the great prophet Jeremiah. Baruch ben Neri was a very old man and too frail to travel to the land of Israel. As Ezra was his closest pupil, Ezra decided that he couldn't leave his mentor, and so he stayed with him in Babylon. When Baruch ben Neri died in 511 BCE, with nothing holding him back, Ezra goes to the land of Israel. In the Jewish tradition, Ezra is known under the name Ezra HaSofer. What is a Sofer? A Sofer in Hebrew is a scribe of the Torah, not only of the Torah, but also of Tefillin and Mezuzot. Ezra also wrote the Megillat Esther. Ezra was the greatest sage of that time.
But was he called a Sofer just because he transcribed books?
There may be several reasons. It is believed that Ezra transcribed the very Torah scroll that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses himself. This scroll was kept in the first temple. After the temple was destroyed, its fate became unknown. It's possible that by some twist of fate it
turned up
in Persia. It is unknown how. But in any case, we know for sure that Ezra had this scroll, the scroll of Moses, which he wrote in the Sinai Desert. This scroll was considered a reference scroll because all the Torah scrolls that were copied during the first temple era were in one way or another compared to this scroll. Ezra had this scroll and personally transcribed the Torah from this scroll written by Moses. This is why all the other Torah scrolls that exist in the modern world were copied from the scroll made by Ezra, and this continues to this day. That is why one of the theories of why Ezra is called Ezra HaSofer is because he copied the Torah of Moses. The second point of view on why he is called Sofer comes from the word lispor. Lispor means to count in Hebrew. It's believed that something called Masorah was passed down from Ezra. What is Masorah? Masorah is a tradition. In a Torah scroll, the vowels are not written, and when there are no vowels,
a word
can be read in various ways. Many centuries later, our rabbis decided to make something we call nikudot, vowels. Nowadays, when you open a modern Torah, not a scroll, but a book, there are vowels there, and the Masorah teaches the correct way to read it. So it is believed that the one who passed on this tradition was Ezra HaSofer. Another reason he's called a Sofer is from the word lispor, which means to count. In this case, to count the letters in the Torah. He knew the number of letters, crowns, and the rules of pronunciation of every word. Our sages say that he was a Kohen. Our sages also say that if Ezra lived at the time of the giving of the Torah, It is quite likely that the Torah would have been given to him instead of Moshe. He was a very special person. Ezra was also the last prophet. He had another name. He was also called Malachi. So in the book of prophets, the book of Malachi is in fact the book of Ezra. Ezra was the last prophet. He bridged the era of the prophets, the Second Temple era. So in the year 511 BCE, when Bar Ben Neri died, and the temple had been rebuilt, and Ezra is ready to go to the land of Israel. The Jews living in the land of Israel must endure many hardships. There are still no city walls protecting Jerusalem, and the city is not in a livable condition. The Kohanim who serve in the temple must live in areas outside of the city because it's impossible to live in Jerusalem. The city is still in ruins. The Jews did not have permission to build walls. Ezra decided to go to the land of Israel. When Ezra went to the land of Israel, his Aliyah, it can't be called the third Aliyah of that time, was probably the smallest. Ezra said to the Jews living in Babylon that if anyone wanted to go with him, they were welcome to join him. There were people who joined him, but unfortunately, there were very few. It is written that representatives of the 12 tribes joined him, those who lived in the territory of the Persian Empire, who were expelled by the Assyrians. Maybe a few people from each tribe made up this Aliyah. He was also joined by people who were of questionable Jewish origin. Who were these people? Well, let's say they were called Halalim. Who was a Halal? In Jewish tradition, if a priest, Kohen, marries a woman who is not supposed to marry, a child that is born to him can no longer be a Kohen. The father is still Kohen, but his child will not be a Kohen. Such children are called Halal. He remains a Jew, an ordinary Jew, but he can't be a Kohen. There is such a thing as a mamzer, an illegitimate child. Mamzeri is a messy thing. It happens when a married woman has a child with a man who is not her husband. So this person is called a mamzer. A mamzer is in a rather difficult position because he is not allowed to marry a Jew. So it's necessary to know who the mamzers are. In Babylon, there were halalim, but there were also mamzers, and there were people who did not know who their father was. In general, these people were considered to be Jews, but Jews of uncertain origin. Being the head of the generation, Ezra understood that after he left, there would no longer be a strong rabbinical presence in Babylon to guide the Jews. He decided that all individuals of questionable origin must go with him to the land of Israel. Why? Because in the land of Israel, under his watch, he can make sure they won't mix with people they should not mix with. So he took them all. The Jews that remain in Babylon will for centuries say that they are the purest Jews of all because all the Jews who had a questionable or tarnished reputation all went with Ezra to the land of Israel. At that moment, while it was possible to return, Ezra said that every Jew who wanted to go with him should meet on the bank of the Ahab River, a tributary of the Euphrates. This was expected to be the long-awaited moment. There was nothing that was stopping the Jews. There is no longer reason not to go. The ones who didn't go yet because the temple wasn't rebuilt and reasoned that it was because the time had not yet come, now they didn't have an excuse as the temple was now rebuilt. The ones that stayed because Ezra was still there now didn't have
that excuse
because Ezra was leaving. All the Jews who still lived in Babylon would come to this meeting place by the Ahab River, a tributary of the Euphrates, gather and go to the land of Israel together. Ezra thought this would be like the exodus of the Jews from Egypt. It is not by chance that the meeting place and the time were chosen to be on the 12th of Nisan. Ezra calculated the 12th of Nisan of that year. The 14th of Nisan is Passover. The 12th of Nisan of that year was exactly 1,000 years from the 14th of Nisan of the year the Jews went out of Egypt. 1,000 years past a millennium. It was the millennial anniversary of the Jews' exodus from Egypt. And now, for the second time in Jewish history, the Jews would make another exodus. If they all gather by the Ahab River, then miracles will happen again, as they did in Egypt.
The Ahab River will part.
And they will go to the land of Israel. The arrival of the Mashiach, the moment that the Jews have been waiting for 1,000 years, would soon arrive. So, for Ezra, the 12th of Nisan, 511 BCE, was a very significant date. He was not expecting every Jew to come, but as Ezra watched the Jews gather, he realized it was not to be. The number of Jews who came was very small, less than a few thousand. The rest didn't come. Even more surprising to Ezra was that there were no Levites in the group. He thought that all the Levites would surely come. Last time, only a few of the Levites came. Most of them stayed in Babylon, and he thought he would bring more Levites to the new temple and teach them how to sing and play instruments, and everything would be as it once was. But not a single Levite came. Ezra asked the Persian governor of a nearby city to convince the Levites who lived there to come with him. This Persian governor, some say he was Jewish, had to force the Levites to go because they did not want to go. Standing at the Ahab River on the 12th of Nisan in the year 511 BCE, Ezra realized that this was not to be another Passover. "And I declared a fast there by the river Ahab," writes Ezra, "that they should fast before our God, to ask him for a straight path for us and our children, and for all our belongings, because I was ashamed to ask the king for an army." Ezra said he was ashamed to ask the king for troops to protect him on the journey, because when he told King Darius that he was leaving, Darius was expecting that every Jew would want to leave. Moreover, he was not just expecting that every Jew would leave, he was sure that every Jew would leave, and he gave every Jew the full opportunity to leave with money and other valuables. King Darius even said,
"You are still
citizens of Persia, and you can return here any time you want. There's nothing stopping you. You have a temple. Ezra is leaving. It's expected that everyone will leave. Why would they need an army?" Ezra thought everyone will come. A pillar of fire, a cloud, would appear as it was in the desert. The Jews will go, and all the nations of the world will see that this is the second Exodus. But no one came. And Ezra said, "I was ashamed. I understood that there were not enough of us, and we could be attacked, stabbed, robbed on the road because we were carrying the remaining temple utensils. And I was ashamed," he said, "to ask the king for an army and horsemen to help protect us from the enemy along the way. Because this we said to the king before our departure, the hand of our God is over everyone who turns to him for good and for his help. And his wrath are all over all who poison him." When the king said to Ezra, "You probably need an army to accompany you," Ezra says, "We don't need an army. You will see what a great exodus is." But Ezra understands that there will be no exodus, and he is ashamed to turn to the king for help. And Ezra is completely ashamed, and he understands that the second temple will never be as good as the first temple, and the coming of Mashiach will not be now. "And we fasted and beseeched our God concerning this, and he accepted our prayer. And I separated 12 of the chiefs of the priests, and I weighed out for them the silver and gold and the vessels, the offering for the house of our God, which the king, his advisors, his chiefs, and all Israel who were present had offered. And I weighed out upon their hands 650 talents of silver. And I said to them, 'You are holy to the Lord, and the vessels are holy.'" He sent the priests ahead with a guard so they wouldn't be robbed along the way. Ezra arrived in Jerusalem knowing that something great that should have happened has not, and he realizes that the problem is even more serious. By then, the number of Jews in the land of Israel has grown to about 60,000, but there was a trend taking place which concerned Ezra. Jewish men started marrying non-Jewish women from nearby areas and assimilating into their non-Jewish traditions and teaching their children to do the same. There were already 113
intermarried
couples. This was very troubling. In America now, the assimilation rate is about 60% for Jews, more than half of the population, millions. That's around 3 million if there are approximately 6 million. Ezra understood that the exodus he was expecting did not happen, and Jews were getting to assimilate and start families with women from other cultures. Ezra had to take serious measures to ensure the survival of the Jewish people. Ezra is considered the one who passed down what is known as modern Judaism. The entire oral Torah will be passed down by him, and the group he founded, called the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the Men of the Great Assembly, a body of 120 of the greatest Torah scholars at that time, who assumed the spiritual leadership of the Jewish people at the beginning of the Second Temple era. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah instituted the Shmona Esrei prayer and set many of the laws that we have now called Tikkunei Ezra, the laws of Ezra. These laws were necessary because at the time there were a lot of odd trends, so to say, especially in Egypt. At that time, there was a Jewish version of the Saporician Zich on the island of Elephantine, with real Jewish Cossacks. We will talk about them next time. Who, just as the Jews finished rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem, decided to build a temple of their own on the island of Elephantine and considered this a normal thing to do. This is why Ezra knew that something had to be done to make every Jew understand what is right and what is wrong. This was Ezra's mission, and this was Nehemiah's mission, the man who will be coming to the land of Israel, and we'll be helping Ezra with everything. We will talk about this next time. Thank you for your attention.